The advice given on this show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended as investment advice. Please consult a financial advisor before undertaking any investment decisions. While the show's producers have tried to provide accurate and timely information and have relied on sources they believe to be reliable, the show may include inadvertent technical or factual inaccuracies. Jack Monteith and Ken Smith do not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the materials provided and expressly disclaim any warranties or merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose.
Good morning and welcome to Successful Investing with me, Jack Monteith, and my business partner, Ken Smith.
Good morning.
This is a show that is going to help you build wealth, protect wealth, and to enjoy the fruits of your success. Ken and I have a combined 40 years experience in the financial world. We're both owners in two wealth management firms, Empirical Wealth Management and Directional Financial Services. We're both certified financial planners. I'm a CPA, and Ken has a master's degree in financial analysis. The point is, we're going to help you navigate through all the noise and endless investment choices to become successful investors. Contact us at our website, www.directionalfs.com, or email us at contact@directionalfs.com, or telephone us at 877-262-9330. You can contact us. We have a monthly e-letter that goes out that deals with various financial planning topics. If you contact us and you're one of the first five to request this free monthly newsletter, we will give you one of our recommended books. You can contact us again at contact@directionalfs.com. So, Ken, with the recent tax season just ending, we've got some a couple of guests that to discuss some great ideas for some charitable giving ideas.
Yeah, it's one of our favorite topics is giving, and we're excited to have two guests. Actually, we've got Margay Diamond, Vice President of Development with Schwab Charitable. Schwab's one of the custodians that we use, and we have a great relationship with Charles Schwab and Company. And Margay Diamond is the Vice President of Development at Schwab Charitable. They're leading provider of philanthropic services, and during Ms. Diamond's seven-year tenure, Schwab Charitable has grown to be the largest charity in California, has attracted more than $3 billion in contributions, and the organization has issued charitable grants totaling more than $1 billion to 50,000 U.S.-based charities to date. At Schwab, Ms. Diamond spearheads the development and educational outreach programs, focusing on training and educating advisors and donors about strategic charitable planning. At nationwide financial planning conferences, she educates advisors about charitable issues such as strategic use of charitable planning vehicles, charitable remainder trust, advanced techniques using donor-advised funds, and incorporating philanthropy into your practice. It's an honor to have her. Margay?
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Well, we wanted to talk about a tool that we've been using with our clients at Schwab, the Donor Advised Fund. So that way we could start, you could just introduce it to us, explain it to us, and tell us why it's such a good way to for individuals to gift and use as a tool to give to support the charities.
Sure. It's become an increasingly popular vehicle over the last, I'd say, 10 years. And one of the reasons why it's so popular is it's simple. That's what we hear back from our donors. The simplicity is incredibly appealing. So Schwab Charitable is actually a 501c3 public charity. We offer the Donor Advised Fund as a vehicle to our clients and essentially open up what's considered a charitable gift account.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their own account with us as the charity. And because we're the charity, they get an immediate tax deduction when they open their account. And folks can open accounts for as little as $5,000. Any asset can be used to make the contribution, so appreciated securities, cash, even private equity or property can be used. And once that goes into the account, then the asset is typically liquidated and reinvested per the donor's direction. We have a choice of 8 mutual funds that are all pre-qualified to get some diversity and hopefully some growth. And for accounts that are over $250,000, the donor can actually have their own independent investment advisor create a customized portfolio. And the goal of this is not that the client would get any additional tax deduction, but that they would have more money to direct to charity. So that account really is theirs. It's advised by the donor. And our role is to make sure that there's fiduciary oversight, to make sure that there is good due diligence on the charities that are being recommended, that the money is going to a charity that really exists, that they're in good standing with the IRS, and to make sure that all of the record keeping is done on behalf of the donor. Mm-hmm. So when the client wants to recommend a grant out to one of their favorite charities for as little as $100, they tell us the name of the charity, the amount, how they'd like to be recognized, and we make sure that happens. So it's a real wonderful way to consolidate the giving that a lot of people already do by writing checks, maybe transferring some stock, and really bundle that into one simplified account where they don't need to scrap up receipts, but simply every quarter they get a statement from us, and at the end of the year they get one piece of paper which summarizes all of their contributions and the fair market value that they've been awarded as a tax deduction, and they simply hand that over to their tax accountant.
Margay, for gifts of property, is there a minimum amount that the a fair market value?
It really doesn't make sense to consider alternative assets for less than $250,000.
Okay. Now, and
that's a good question.
And does property have to be owned free and clear?
Yeah, so there are some considerations where debt can be forgiven. Usually goes towards lowering the tax deduction, but typically we like to see assets of that nature that are owned free and clear.
Does it matter where the property is located?
Nope. It can be residential or commercial, and it can be anywhere in the United States. You know, it's very interesting, too, because we have found through our research that 80% of non-cash gifts, meaning things like private equity or a painting or a piece of property that are offered to charities are declined. 80% are declined.
Wow.
Because the end user charity really doesn't have a mechanism for dealing with the risk management associated with those gifts. But they can make amazing charitable gifts for clients.
Okay, well, you know that we're in the, we have a lot of high tech in the area of, you know, Oregon and Seattle. And it seems to me that this would be a great tool for gifting appreciated stock. Is that the case?
That's true. It's the number one asset that we receive in is appreciated securities. And I know in this economic environment, a lot of people may think, eesh, I don't actually have a lot of appreciated stock right now. But it is important. One of the things that we stress is the financial planning aspect of your charitable giving. There is, I have found, a big disconnect between those donors, who, particularly those who seek financial advice from an investment advisor such as yourself, and they go in and they talk about their portfolio allocation, retirement, their kids' college, but the topic of charitable giving doesn't come up. And yet it is a financial transaction.
Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of folks just simply write checks. And there's a face value benefit to giving cash, but there could be a lot more strategy and financial benefit involved if they were to sit down and look holistically at their portfolio, assess what kind of what amount they want to be giving to charity, and then put that donation into their charitable account at the time when it makes sense for them. So if you're rebalancing a portfolio and you might take some of the stock that would normally incur capital gains at the sale and transfer that into your charitable account, and the time that it goes into the account is when it's locked in value. And then they can make their charitable distributions out to the organizations they care about in December, but it has nothing to do with their tax benefit, which has already been secured.
Well, it seems like, you know, there's always a lot of tax scrambling at the end of the year. So how much lead time would you need, for example, let's take the example of property, to make the transaction completed to get the deduction versus
stock? In case of appreciated real property, you're probably looking at 3 to 5 weeks. That is a more complex transaction.
Okay.
In the case of somebody who wanted to donate private equity, let's say C Corp stock, which we find is probably the top non-cash donation that we receive in that category, we can transact those within a matter of days. And if you're giving regular appreciated securities or cash, that tax deduction can be locked in the same day that you transfer those assets.
Okay.
And the account can be set up within 24 hours. So it's quite quick.
Well, Margaret, this is Ken. And one of the things I really got excited about with the donor advised account is the fact that you can make these contributions into this and for your tax purposes because the fund in itself is a qualified charity.
That's correct.
But then distribute it out over the course of your lifetime or potentially multiple generations. And maybe you could just explain how that's kind of unique to a donor advised fund.
It is. It mirrors a lot of what people typically think a private foundation does. And yet, there probably aren't very many people who would be able to open a private foundation within 24 hours and with no setup costs.
Right.
So it's a lot simpler vehicle than that. You don't have to file any tax returns. We do that all for the donor. But it is a feature that people take great advantage of. And when they set up the account, they have the option, if you will, to name the account. So I might name mine the Diamond Family Charitable Fund, for example, and that's what would register in all of the grants that would go out to my favorite charities. And I also have the right, as I said, to recommend how the investments go, and the distributions out to charities are at my recommendation when I want them to go. And then at the end of the day, I choose whether or not I'd like to have a successor donor advisor. Let's say I want my daughter to take over the account upon my death.
Uh-huh.
Or I could actually name my favorite 2-3 charities so that upon my passing, whatever assets were remaining in the account would be distributed per my recommendation to those specific charities. But by far, the majority of donors recommend someone in their family, and it's typically a child, because they really want to teach their children about the legacy of charitable giving, make it a part of their lives. We know many of our donors have said that they use it as a teaching tool, and they have a quarterly family meeting where they sit down and they talk about what's important to them. They ask the child to pick a charity and explain why they want to give their money away to it, what it's going to be used for. And then they allow the child to make, through our online services, the minimum $100 grant. So it becomes part of their life. I think many parents are worried about having lots of creature comforts for their children that they didn't have themselves, and how to balance that with the idea of giving back.
Sure. Margay, you may have just answered this question, but once the assets are transferred into the charitable trust, is there a minimum required distribution to the charities on a yearly basis?
There isn't, and you know, that will vary from place to place. There are certainly some community foundations that offer donor advised funds that do have required distributions. We do not. The IRS, which of course we are governed by, says that in aggregate, Schwab Charitable needs to distribute 5%. Now we do well above that.
Okay.
And so there are a few donors here and there. Most of our donors give well above 5%. In fact, our annual distribution rates, with no requirement to the donors, happens to be between 15% and 24%. So it's quite high. People are giving. But I would also say that it allows the flexibility for someone who needs to settle some tax issues very quickly, isn't sure where they want to give to. It gives them the ability to thoughtfully create a plan for their giving, do some research, without having to feel pressured to give that money away right away.
Margay, so as advisors, you know, certainly we can connect to this program through our connection with Charles Schwab. But for the listeners that don't have that connection, how do they access this program?
Sure. Certainly Schwab Charitable is not just for Schwab clients. We encourage everyone to take a look at donor advised fund programs, whether they use us or not. But if you're interested in Schwab Charitable, the best thing to do is to visit our website at schwabcharitable, all one word, .com. That's S-C-H-W-A-B, charitable.com. We also have a wonderful group of donor relations folks, 3 people on the team who've been with us for quite some time, who are specialists in the areas of charitable planning. And we have an 800 number to reach them, which is 1-800-746-6216.
Oh, that's fantastic. And At this time, I'd like to bring in one of our associate advisors, Ashley Dahl, just to talk a little bit about how we've been using these. Ashley's become kind of the in-house expert on the donor-advised fund, and over the last year, we've really started to incorporate it more and more in our practice and helping our clients achieve and reach their charitable giving desires. Ashley, are you with us?
Yes. Good morning, Jack and Ken.
Good morning, Ashley.
You know, Ashley, I thought maybe you could share with us a little bit about some of the common things that how we're using these in our clients' accounts and how we interact with it that's made it a better way to give.
Sure, definitely. And I also agree with Margie. I think outside of the financial planning techniques that we're able to implement, it's truly the simplicity that we've found for our clients that is most beneficial. A lot of the time, like Jack said, at the end of the year, there's a rush to get all the gifting done and finding wiring instructions for our clients. But using the donor-advised funds, our clients are able to simply make a couple clicks on their online account and gift directly to their favorite charities.
So they can do things, and one of the first things we do, Ashley, when we meet with clients is we look at their existing portfolio, and I think this could go back to our discussion about advisors, Jack. We don't just automatically blow out or sell everything in the portfolio in a taxable account. We look at the cost basis or the tax ramifications of that, and then we ask clients, are you giving to charities regularly? And 90% of the time, we find that they are, and they have been writing checks instead of gifting securities or very highly appreciated assets. And so, Ashley, how has that worked for us in terms of even making the tax benefits better?
Sure. There is definitely a tax benefit. A lot of times clients come in and they have stock positions that were low basis, and instead of having to sell those and incur the gain, we're able to move those securities into the donor advised funds, and they receive the immediate tax benefit. So from a financial planning perspective, we can better manage their portfolio and their charitable gifting throughout their life by taking this donor advised fund into.
And I think what's exciting about that to me is a lot of times clients will have, say they have one stock, and Jack mentioned technology stocks, they have one stock, it's got a very high, a very low cost basis, so it would be a very large tax if they sold that stock, and then we may convince them to sell or to gift some of that stock, and then they could take it a step further and say, well, by getting it into this donor-advised fund, and Margie, you can jump in here if you agree or disagree. But by getting it into this fund, one of the benefits is then you can diversify it. You can take the pool of investments inside of the donor advised fund, and I've looked at them, and there's some broadly diversified funds that you can choose from, and have several years of gifting put into that account. But a huge benefit is you've eliminated the risk of being in that one stock while getting the tax benefit. Am I on target there?
You are absolutely on target, and that's, as I said, the financial planning and strategic aspect of what can happen when there's real synergy between an investment advisor and the client, really looking at the portfolio holistically, can be tremendous. And it is bigger than just the actual deduction off of your AGI at the end of the year, and we know that those are pretty good rules for donor advised funds. You can deduct up to 30% off your adjusted gross income for appreciated securities and up to 50% off your adjusted income for cash donations.
Great.
Of course, the beauty with using appreciated securities is that you also avoid, as you said, paying the capital gains.
Okay, well, it's been great, Margie and Ashley, having you both on, and this is obviously a topic where we could spend more time as well. Margie, if you want to give out the contact information for people to reach Schwab or to get access, I think it was there was a website and a phone number.
Yes, thank you. Again, our specialists can be reached for information at 1-800-746-6216. And you can also visit our website, which has all of our information at www.schwabcharitable.org, O-R-G.
Well, great.
Great. Thanks, Mark, and thanks, Ashley.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You know, Ken, as part of our regular financial planning and certainly for new clients, fact-finding, the wealth management process, we review the client's tax returns, and oftentimes we'll see where the opportunity is for these kinds of situations. And, you know, we work very closely with the clients, CPAs or tax advisors and attorneys. So certainly for our listeners out there that are not working with us, you want to connect your CPAs and sometimes your attorneys into a transaction like this to make sure everybody's on the same page. And certainly as advisors, Ken and I and the people at our firms, we work very closely with the CPAs and attorneys to connect into these types of transactions. Well, yeah, Ken, let's move on. Time is going by. So we've got I wanted to cover one topic today, and that's basically a brief discussion on, you know, where do market returns come from? You know, the stock market goes up, it goes down. It, you know, over historical periods of time, the stock market's averaged a little over 10%. But why? Where does it come from?
Well, Jack, you know, we talked about this a little bit on our last show. We were talking about gold, and you know, while gold doesn't have an expected return because there's no earnings there.
Right.
And when you're investing in stocks, you're really buying into companies, and companies usually have a goal to make earnings and to grow those earnings over time, and then eventually pay and distribute that earnings through dividends. And so there's a function of return there. And when you're looking at bonds, typically it's the return is 100% coming from the interest payment that those bonds are making over their lifetime. And usually stocks, when the stocks are moving, the returns on stocks and the fluctuations we see in prices in large part are due to what's happening to interest rates. Because when interest rates go up, investors, you know, say, hey, well, stocks are typically generating X amount of return. Those bonds look more attractive because they are less risky than stocks. And so typically in times when bonds are yielding high, stocks aren't doing as well, and vice versa when bonds are yielding very low. And not every series of time, but most series, a longer-term series of time, there's a correlation there. So, you know, there's a lot of academic research out there, and this idea of these academics came up with, Eugene Fama came up with what he calls a three-factor model, this idea that investors get a rate of return in addition to buying government securities or bonds, government bonds, U.S. Treasury bills or bonds. They get an additional return for owning stocks, not because they pick the right stock, right, or not because they pick the right sector of the market, but simply if they owned all the stocks in the market, they would expect to, they're taking on what's called systematic risk. And for that systematic risk, they should be expect to get rewarded. Now, in one-year periods of time, stocks beat bonds, you know, maybe only 50% or 60% of the time. But over 30-year periods of time, it's almost 100% of the time that stocks have had a higher rate of return. So then where else can you get return? And I think this is where the discussion gets a little more. The other two parts of the factor of his three-factor model is, you know, small companies, if you just did nothing more but tilted your portfolio or weighted your portfolio towards small companies, those companies who have a very small capitalization, they're early in their legacy of development, their development part. Small companies have returned a higher rate than large companies, and the explanation for this is that they're riskier. You know, they're unstable. They don't have a track record of solid earnings growth. They usually don't have extremely strong balance sheets and so forth. And from a volatility perspective, the ups and downs in any one particular year, they're more risky. So if you looked at a small company index, the CRSPI 610 index is just an index that measures small companies. It's averaged about 12.05% from 1927 through the end of 2006, while the S&P, which is those S&P 500 companies, those large companies, averaged about 10.4% per year. Now, there's one other factor here that these academics came up with, and Eugene Fama and Kenneth French were doing their research on this. And what they said is, you know what, we've also determined that value companies have had a higher rate of return than growth companies. And there's, you know, they have different, depending on who you're reading, they have different explanations for this. One is that, you know, value companies are those companies that typically have lower P/E ratios or higher book values. And usually the reason why they have a low P/E ratio is because they're stressed. Something's going on where they're not making the steady earnings that a growth company has that's demanding this high P/E ratio. And because of that stress, the market's demanding a higher rate of return. That's one explanation. If you look at Large value companies have averaged about 11.54%, so about an extra over 1% per year since 1927 over the S&P, and small value companies have had a substantial performance advantage, 14.51%. So one interesting thing, we've talked about Warren Buffett and Peter Lynch, two kind of famous investors in different ways. Both of these guys, did a very good job. But if you look at them, they're both at times value investors, and Peter Lynch is small. And so some of that return could be explained there. So when we're building portfolios, we'll talk about this more in other shows, Jack, how we take these factors and how we use them to construct a portfolio around the world.
Well, Ken, time flies when you're having fun. I want to remind our listeners, we've put together a very excellent monthly financial planning topic e-letter. Contact us at our email at contact@directionalfs.com. We'll set you up. It's no cost. Time does fly, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And so we'll see you next week.
Okay.
The advice given on this show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended as investment advice. Please consult a financial advisor before undertaking any investment decisions. While the show's producers have tried to provide accurate and timely information and have relied on sources they believe to be reliable, the show may include inadvertent technical or factual inaccuracies. Jack Monteith and Ken Smith do not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the materials provided and expressly disclaim any warranties or merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose.